Welcome to the Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I am your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And as always, I am joined by my incredible co-host, DBB's resident draft expert, Blake Silverman. Blake, we've got some bad news to break opening up this podcast. I don't know if people saw on Twitter, but it looks like Jalen Duren's going to be out for at least a couple of weeks. I know you were just writing an article here for Detroit Bad Boys, kind of breaking down all the news. So why don't you give all the listeners an update, and we'll kind of talk about where to go from there.
Yeah, so unfortunate one to start it off. Shams Charania of The Athletic reported that Jalen Duren is going to miss 2 weeks with a sprained left ankle. We think it's the other ankle than the one that was bothering him and caused him to miss some time at the beginning of the season. The one he was out for a few games with came back, didn't look right, and then they put him back on the shelf just to get fully healthy. So this is really just like a brutal blow. Like when I was thinking about it, when he got hurt and now like knowing he's going to miss some time, it's just a bad to worse moment. Like, we think nothing else can go wrong, and something does go wrong. And also really just like sucks for Jalen Duren and the rest of the group that's trying to gel to each other. Like when he went down at the end of the game against Memphis, like he immediately grabbed his ankle and was pounding the floor frustrated. So it sucks to see it. Like it really just sucks for everyone involved. And hopefully it's a speedy recovery, but at the same time, the way the season's going, I think they should give him his time, make sure he's 100% right before they throw him back out on the floor.
Yeah, and we did kind of see the opposite of that right before, where it looked like with the previous ankle injury, he was kind of laboring through some pain. I mean, he was at least a little bit hobbled when he played, but you know, there are two silver linings here with this one, right? The first is, like you said, it seems like it's the other ankle. We're not entirely sure on that one, but that is what it sounds like from, you know, messaging coming out from the team, from Shams. So that's good. You know, it's not building upon an ankle that was already sprained. That's good news, at least it sounds like. And honestly, you know, watching it when it happened, it looked worse than just 2 weeks. It looked pretty bad. That thing moved a lot and it was stepped on. There's a lot going on. So the fact that it does sound like it's a shorter term thing, and it, you know, it's not building upon another injury, it seems like there's at least a little bit of silver lining here. He's a young guy. So, you know, hopefully he can come back in a couple of weeks and make the impact he was making during that Grizzlies game, where I thought he honestly played pretty well.
Yeah, he looked good. And I mean, it was really just a killer, because I think when the injury happened, it was with like 3 or so minutes left in the game. And it was at that point where the game was getting away. So just to see like a backbreaking loss like it was, just more fourth quarter mistakes like we've been seeing, and to really end it like that, it was just awful. Like you said, at least it's not the same ankle that's bothering him, hopefully, that we know of. And hopefully it's not as serious as it looked when he went down and was agonizing in pain on the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. So just, you know, practically, right, next couple of weeks when he's out, what do you think the Pistons are going to do? Like, what do you expect them to do with that front court rotation, right? I mean, they do have options. The game against Memphis, James Wiseman played over Marvin Bagley. Maybe they keep that sort of thing going. Like, they don't necessarily have to start Wiseman or Bagley. They could shift Stewart up to the five. There's, for a team that's 2-19, there's oddly a lot of flexibility here with what they can do in the front court. They may not all be great answers, but they have options. So what are you expecting Monty Williams to do here to kind of compensate for this loss?
What I'm expecting, honestly, is to see Isaiah Stewart shifted up to the five, and have like Bojan alongside him. And then after that, whether they go three guards or put Asar Thompson back into the starting lineup, we'll see what Monty decides to do there. But I definitely see Isaiah Stewart taking more of the front court responsibility. what stinks is there's still the defensive concerns of Bagley and Wiseman. Hopefully they can minimize that, especially without Duren. But really, I think like Isaiah Stewart hasn't been super efficient. He shot the ball well, but I mean, no one's giving him attention and it messes with spacing and everything. So I think as long as he can find a way to get baskets when he's in there, we're going to see more of Isaiah Stewart, which is not what I was thinking I would say before Duren got hurt. Really, I think this whole injury just hurts the team defensively. I wonder if we see Monty junk it up and try to play like a small ball lineup, even without Stewart, like maybe having Assar as a small ball five and seeing how that works. And that's only really because of the defensive concerns of Wiseman and Bagley. So I think it'll be more minutes for Isaiah Stewart. But yeah, it's just a bone breaker defensively without Duren.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely a body blow. It's obvious watching these games, the impact that he's having out there. And he does not have a skill set that they can easily replace. He's pretty unique on the roster, being a guy that is a lob threat, but is really physical and also is at least an improving defender, right? But you bring up Isaiah Stewart kind of shifting up to the five, and I'm with you. I think that's what's going to happen. So let's talk for a minute about Isaiah Stewart. And you bring up the shooting, right? He's kind of going through a cold spell. And my question is this. Do you think that Isaiah Stewart is going through this cold spell just kind of haphazardly, right? It's just kind of random. That's how it's happening. Or to my eye, it honestly looks like teams are starting to guard him like a shooter more. He's not taking as many wide open looks. So a lot of these have been lately contested, which before literally wide open. Like you're talking good distance between the defender and him earlier on in the season when you and I were having the conversations of, oh, like, you know, when other teams realize that Isaiah Stewart can shoot like this, they're going to guard him differently. To my eye, it looks like they're guarding him differently, and he's just not making the shots because of it. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily his fault, okay? I don't think you could really count on a guy like him to make a lot of contested threes, so this is expected. But do you see the same thing, or do you think there's something else going on with this cold spell that's lasted – you know, a couple weeks now. It's been prolonged.
A little bit. And honestly, I think what that might be is removing Assar Thompson from the starting lineup, who teams have been totally like leaving alone on the perimeter. And without him on the floor, like, yeah, Stu still isn't guarded super heavily, but maybe they're able to just put more attention on him and just, I don't know, not give him a wide open look. And I think a little bit of it, like we've been talking about his turnovers the past couple weeks, the decision-making and like putting the ball on the floor for him, like hasn't looked good. I don't know. I just don't think he's going to be a guy that's ever checked super heavily on the perimeter. But if he's consistently like hovering around 35% from three, maybe he draws a little bit more of the eye. And just like the Pistons haven't shot the ball well in general, minus like Bojan coming back the past couple games. So I think that's a little bit of it too. And yeah, I don't know. Do you see that same thing?
No, I do. And you're completely right. They shot, I believe it was 32% from three against the Memphis Grizzlies on Wednesday night. Like, the team in general is going through a cold spell. It is not just Isaiah Stewart. I do, like I said, I do think he is being defended a little bit differently than he was to open the season. He's not getting as many wide open or even like truly open looks, which naturally is going to hurt his percentage a little bit. And Isaiah Stewart, you know, he's not a guy that you're going to run off screens to to take a catch and shoot jump shot. You know, he's not a guy that's going to isolate and get his own look. He's a guy that's strictly catching and shooting from a standstill position. And because of that, he can't really create space. All right. And you look at him, and like you said, he can't put the ball on the floor very effectively. He doesn't really have a counter to his shot at the moment. So when he's getting guarded a little bit more heavily, he's not used to it. Like him having a dip in percentage, it should be expected. Like, it's not necessarily his fault. The problem is looking at the rest of the roster when no one else but Bojan Bogdanović can hit a three. And that's not just the young guys. That's Alec Burks that can't hit water if he fell off a boat right now. Like, he's been cold forever. That's Isaiah Livers, who's a guy that, you know, his entire reputation coming out of Michigan was that he can shoot and he can defend. And honestly, he's not been doing either well. But look at this. We're getting negative already. Peek behind the curtain for all our listeners. We had planned that this week we're going to open up the podcast talking more positively about the team. Like, okay, look, they're bad, but there are things that are going well. And that's where we want to take it. That's where we're about to go with this for the next, I don't know, eight or so minutes. But, you know, you get the Durin news, and then you start talking about Isaiah Stewart and everyone going cold from three. And, like, God, it's so hard to forget that they're 2-19, Blake. It's so tough.
It is. I mean, I don't know. It's just like the group together is just structurally wrong. Like, there's few things that you could cherry pick that are going well, like Cade playing off the ball a little bit more, Jaden Ivey's confidence going towards the hoop, Asar Thompson's like defense still, but like when, and also like I can't not bring up like Bojan, who is just shooting incredibly like his first couple of games back. But when you like put it all together, it's not working. So it's tough to look past that, especially when some good things are happening, but you just can't string together a full game, and you can't even really even like play or like do anything effective in fourth quarters. So it's really difficult to look past that, unfortunately, but there are some progressions that we can, I guess, look optimistically about.
Yeah. And all right, let's give that a shot. All right. For these next couple of minutes, let's look at what's going well. And guys, we are going to get to the fourth quarter woes. I guarantee you that's going to be an unavoidable topic here as we move through the show. But I've got one for you, Blake. Let's look at Cade Cunningham. Yes, he's playing off the ball, but he's still handling a really large usage, right? He's still touching the ball the majority of the time when he's out on the court. His turnovers have gone down. I know he had 5 against Memphis, and truly at least 3 or 4 of those 5 were of the, I don't think you should have even attempted that pass variety. Not the, he got blitzed and he lost the ball. So there is some of this, but if you look over the past month, like even over this losing streak, he's down almost an entire turnover per game. I think when you're watching these games, he is cutting out at least 1 or 2 of these, you know, what were you thinking? Why did you throw that ball? Passes. So, you know, game to game, he's cutting out 1 or 2 of them, not on the average. So I think despite all of this negativity that we're witnessing with all this losing, I do think he's improving as a take care of the ball guy. You've seen his assist to turnover ratio go up. He's averaging more assists per game in the past 10 games than he was before. Like, I think you're starting to see a little bit of that development that a lot of us were really hoping to see out of him early on in this season. Have you been noticing the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, because his turnovers have went down over the past few games, but then, like we talked about, he had 5 turnovers against Memphis on Wednesday night. One of those turnovers was in garbage time, so you can essentially filter that out. The stats are going to say 5, but let's call it 4. 3 of the 4 of those were just like passes where I wasn't sure what he was doing. Like, I don't know if he
wasn't sure what he was seeing.
Yeah, like if he saw something different? Like, I mean, it's easy to say watching it, like, why are you making that pass? But maybe he saw something different on the floor. So this might be a difficult ask, but I want to see some of those turnovers go down. Like, the other turnover that I thought was okay is, like, he got swiped and just didn't see a defender, which, like, there's not really much avoiding that. Do you want it to happen? No. But I want to see, like, the careless turnovers go down. I think we have seen them go down over the past few games, but last night, I'd say 4 of his 5 or 3 of his 4, if we're filtering out garbage time, were like just bad pass turnovers into traffic, and it was easily picked up. I would love to see that filtered down. But if he's always going to be like a 4 turnover a game guy, like we've talked about, like I think that's what Luka Doncic is hovering around this year. Like, those high usage guys are going to have a lot of turnovers. I hope we can limit the questionable ones, if that's not too much of an ask.
Well, I mean, I've said it, but you've said it too. Like, it's not that the questionable ones have gone away, because they haven't. But I do think, you know, just from my eye when I'm watching these, that they have gone down, right? Like, his ceiling on turnovers is much lower right now than it was back in the first few games of the season. Like, 5 or 6 is a probably the upper end limit recently of what we've been getting from him. And you've had nights where it's been far lower than that. You know, 1, 2, 3. He's had these nights more recently when he didn't at all in early on in the season. So I think that we've seen the ceiling on his number of turnovers per game drop. And it's not going to go to zero, at least not during this season, I don't think. But with how high usage he is, understanding that there are going to be some turnovers, I'm thinking that actually getting down to, you know, 3.89, 4.0, 4.1, like, I think that that's now actually reachable, when, you know, I wasn't so sure with how we started it this year when he was up at like 5.4, right? Like, it's been dropping precipitously. So he's improving. You know, I do think it's a little bit of a reminder for us guys, right? Like, these are really young players, and despite the wins that aren't coming at all, and that's a separate conversation and we're going to have it today. But despite that, there are these little glimmers, and I think his turnovers are one of them. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, he's had numerous 6, 7 turnover games this season.
Yeah.
And the fact that we haven't seen those recently is just like a sign of improvement. Yeah. Last night was 5. Hopefully we don't see it get up to that night in, night out. It'll probably happen at least here or there, but hopefully he can just stick around that 4 average, or maybe, like, if we can look at the midway point of the season and compare his first 20 games to his second 20 games and just compare what those two numbers look like there, hopefully we see as much of a decrease to say, like, there's something that changed. He's not, at least, not making as many turnovers or careless ones. Like, our turnover is going to happen. Yeah. But like you said, hopefully that number continues to stay where it has been.
Yeah. And to throw out just one negative quickly, of course, the game that Jalen Duren goes down with an ankle injury is game number, I think, 3 of him and Cade really rekindling that lob chemistry. So, like, great. We can't have nice things, whatever. Blake, do you have a positive for me? Do you have something else that you think's been going well despite kind of the losing situation that we're alluding to here?
Oh, man. I mean, I hate to, like, I mean, we need to have the Jaden Ivey conversation. Like, rotations and, like, the minutes that he's been given don't make any sense. I think with the Duren injury, it changes things. Like, I mean, just the fact that there's been two recent games where he hasn't played in the first quarter in favor of Burks and Sasser, who have not looked good, is just weird. Like, you have to think that that's going to change now. But looking at like a positive sign, like Ivy's aggression and like driving to the hoop, and I guess just not like in his rookie season, and I guess even further back from that, you sort of saw him driving and going to the hoop. It feels like without really like a plan, that was kind of the player he is. He just goes, drives as fast as he can and hopes for the best, and just like whirls around as he gets there, and hopefully like good things happen. But now I feel like he's just more strongly like knows what he wants to do. And when he does get to the rim, he's making a strong decision in going up to the hoop or trying to draw contact. I think that's been a good sign. And also with Ivy, like his leash has been so short as far as we know because of the defensive concerns. Like he hasn't look like a negative to me on the defensive end. Like it hasn't stood out to me. Like, has he gotten blown by and things like that? Yeah. But
So is Killian.
yeah, like not more than some other guys have. So I think just like what we've seen from Ivy over the past however many games, no matter how weird it has been a good or like a positive that we can take away.
No, I totally, this is going to be the thing that I brought up next if you didn't. Because like you, I think you look at Jaden Ivey right now, and it's kind of like, you're a kid, it's Christmas morning, you go down, there's this big box, and it's wrapped in this beautiful wrapping paper, and you get so excited because it looks great, it looks awesome. And then you open up the gift and it sucks, and you're not happy about it. And the wrapping paper in the box right now, that's how Jaden Ivey's playing. He's playing really well. He is. Like, his per minute numbers through the roof, his percentages up. He's finishing at the rim really well. You're right. He's aggressive. He's getting downhill. He's the best at putting pressure on the rim on the team. And he's not getting stuck on screens, ball screens as much anymore as a defender. Like he's made all of these improvements and he looks really good. And then you open up that gift and the socks are that he's just not playing even 20 minutes a night. Like, oh, cool. Great. Great. Yeah, awesome. Like it's so unavoidable that he's playing so well, but there's this, there's the coal in the stocking, whatever Christmas metaphor we want to make here, Blake. It's not good because he should be playing more. Why isn't he playing the entire first quarter? None of this makes sense to me. He's doing well.
Right. The only like, and it's not even like a rationalization. I guess it's just like the only thing I can think is Monty is like struggling with his rotations. Like, I can't really think of
Oh, yes.
another answer as to why you would go 10 deep in the first quarter and one of those 10 is not Jaden Ivey. Then you put him in the second quarter and he plays all 12 minutes of the second quarter. I think just like struggles that we've seen from Burks, Livers, and Sasser. And I mean, like James Wiseman and Marvin Bagley, however you want to like handle their minutes. I think all those struggles, like it, Monty has to shorten the rotation. And like if Jaden Ivey isn't a part of that, like a big part of that new shortened rotation, then that's an issue because he. Like, we need a guy like him on the floor more often than not, just because, like, yeah, the defense hasn't been great, but it's just been so many spells of the offense, like, not being able to get a bucket. Like, yeah, we've had Bojan back for the past couple games, but like, it can't just be him. It can't just be Cade. And I think, like, Ivy debatably is like one of our top offensive options, so he has to be a big part of like what we're putting on the floor moving forward.
The most ridiculous thing for me, Blake, is that I feel like most of us could make a pretty compelling argument that Jaden Ivey has played like the fourth or fifth best player on this roster. And as you said, he's the most talented 11th man in the league right now. Like, it doesn't make any sense. We can't do this. We got to go to questions because we could talk about the Jaden Ivey situation forever. So let's jump into a fella from Detroit Bad Boys comment section. He asks, how do we feel about the Cade, Killian, and Jaden Ivey lineup? Asking about strengths, weaknesses, and how likely we are to see it moving forwards.
I like it personally. Like the one game we saw of it, it looked good. I think the strength is you allow Cade to play off the ball. You allow Ivy to move around. And I think the thing is with Cade and Ivy, like I don't think either of them really need to be like, yeah, they need the ball in their hands to score, but I don't think they need the ball in their hands to like operate. Like they can move off the ball and like, I think things will go good that way. I mean, the weakness is defense, like playing a smaller lineup. Also like, I mean, Killian has had a good few games, but his offense is certainly like wishy-washy at best. So hopefully he can continue like the past however many games that we've seen from him. How likely it is to be used moving forward. I feel like I keep going back to this Duren injury because it's so fresh, but I feel like that just throws such a wrench in the whole rotation. And also the biggest thing for this three guard lineup is the minutes that you're getting out of Sasser and Burks. Like those have not been positive the past few games. So I think that limits the amount of time you can have Cade, Killian, and Ivy on the floor together, if you can at all. Alec Burks, we know, is a good NBA player. Marcus Sasser, we've already seen flashes from him. So hopefully it returns back to that. But if those two specifically, you're getting negatives out of their minutes on the floor, it just limits the time that you can run the three guard lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And I think something else that maybe goes into this a little bit, when you put out those three guys together, right, you're obviously sticking a wing back onto the bench. So like you said, yes, you're guaranteeing more minutes for Sasser and Burks, obviously. But this also puts Asar Thompson on the bench. And, you know, I know you're a big Asar Thompson fan, Blake, but I don't know if you've noticed this as well. He's not the same guy off the bench. He hasn't played like the same guy when he's been off the bench. To my eye, he's fouled more. I'm not sure how much of that is his fault or not, but he seems less aggressive on offense, a little bit more passive. There are more mistakes. It seems like he's pressing. What do you want to maximize? This is going to be the question, I think, all season when you're looking at this team and we're discussing lineups, because there are lineups that you can trot out that are going to be really good at shooting, but they are not going to defend a lick. And there are lineups, as we saw early on in the year, that are the exact opposite. And then you've got the situation with Jaden Ivey, right? You're not going to play him in the first quarter. He's only going to get, 18 minutes a night? Interesting, right? That means more minutes for Burks and Sasser and Killian. And of the three, Killian's really the only one that's been playing well. But then at the same time, if you want to take one of the guards out of the rotation, Livers hasn't been great. Bagley hasn't been awesome recently. No one knows what's going on with James Wiseman. Like, there is no not winning lineup, but there's no easy lineup you can put out there. There's no lineup without weaknesses. So I think with all of these, it's really difficult to guess what Monty Williams is going to do just because of the predicament that this roster has him in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think like, if we're talking about what is best for, like what is best to do this season for the organization moving forward, like with this three guard lineup specifically, I think you have to decide if it's something you want to do long term or give it enough run to see if it's something you really want to do in the future. The unfortunate part is, like, I mean, Monty Williams is just doing what he can to, like, win a game right now. So I think he's just going to try whatever he can to get out there. But I don't know. To me, like, you're 2-19. It's going to be hard to really, like, pull much good out of this season other than development. So, I mean, I think if you see Cade and Ivy as your backcourt of the future, like, play them alongside each other as much as you can at this point, no matter who is next to them. If you see Asar Thompson as a long-term starter in this five, along with those two, play him alongside them, because at this, like, it's crazy that we're talking like the season is over in December. Like, the Pistons season is kind of over, unfortunately. So I think you just need to focus on development, but the flip side of that is we need to find a way to win a game.
So here's what I want to ask you on this development piece. If you look at the young players on this roster and what they could be in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, honestly meshes really well. Like, I can envision a group of four of a fully realized Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Asar Thompson, Jalen Duren, and having it work out really well. But right now, those guys don't necessarily help each other out, if you get where I'm going with this. Like, Cade Cunningham needs a lot of space. Of the other three players of that core group of four, like, Jaden Ivey can shoot off the catch, but, you know, even he's at 34-35% this season. The other two are total non-shooters. Asar Thompson, too. You know, he needs space out there to do what he does. And really, Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey are really the only shooters there. Some people think that Jaden Ivey really needs the ball in his hands to develop. I would disagree with that, but there are people that would make the argument. And if that's the case, then, you know, taking the ball out of Cade's hands all the time, a little bit, good. A lot, not so much. So my question is, when we're looking in the short term, right, we're looking at just this season, how do you weigh maximizing the guys around some of these young players when they don't necessarily fit like a glove right now? And obviously you do want to prioritize the guys that you have.
Yeah, it's a tough question. And I think the easiest answer is, like, I mean, you just said it, and like a lot of conversation that, like, I've seen on Twitter and everything has talked about the core four being like Cade, Ivy, Duren, and Asar. Like, the one person that's missing from that who is like the rock of your team right now is Isaiah Stewart. So I think the easiest answer to that question was, the only player who started every game this season besides Cade Cunningham is Stewart. So I wonder if some of those issues that you just brought up, like spacing for Cade, maybe Ivy on the ball a little bit more, taking a little bit of pressure off of Asar, like giving him more clear pass to like the hoop, is seeing what Stewart is like off the bench. Like, now, unfortunately, with the Duren injury, I don't think we have that opportunity. I just would like to see what would happen with that and what you can put around like Cade and Ivy and even Asar specifically, with maybe like staggering Stu in and out of that starting group or having him as the first one off the bench.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I do think that the answer is probably starting to stagger some guys. Like, an easy one is Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey, right? Like, if if when Cade is out on the court, you need a lot of things running through him, and you don't want to run it through Ivy, then you do that and you pull Ivy off the court first, and you bring in a guy, Burks, Killian, Sass, or whoever, to come in and push Cade Cunningham off the ball a little bit. So there's that. You could probably do the same thing with like Asar and Bojan too if you wanted, though. Honestly, I wish those two were just kind of like connected at the hip whenever they played. If one's out there, I'd really like the other to be out there for both of them, right? Because Asar can defend and Bojan can't, but then Bojan can shoot and Asar can't. So there's that. But I think you're right. I don't think there's an easy answer for it. I do think that you can start by replacing Isaiah Stewart, but even if you take those four guys and you just stick in Bojan Bogdanović, like, okay, now Cade Cunningham's just the second best shooter on the court, right, instead of the first. So that it's tough. And hey, since we're talking about development, let's go to this question here from Tads in the DBB comments. He asks, are the Pistons so bad that it is messing up the development of the young players on the roster right now, Blake?
Oh man, that's a hard hitter too. The tough part is like, I mean like skill wise, I'm gonna say like no, because they're getting like good experience. I mean, yeah, it's like Cade hasn't been able to develop that connection with Durin because of all the injuries and everything. But like with this, I'm almost looking at it as more of a confidence thing, and like just believing that they can win in this league, like whether they have the ability to do it together or individually or elsewhere is another thing. But when you have like this young of a roster and you've lost 18 games in a row, like that has to do something to your mental. I know like Stewart has said it multiple times that this losing streak is like the hardest thing that him or anyone in the locker room has went through, and they have to figure out how to get through it. But when you have a 20 point per game guy like Bojan Bogdanović come back and you lose two games, you had a chance to win both of them, like I think it just goes further down. So I don't like, I think what we've learned is these guys are all like the young players have potential. Like they're all likely going to be good players in the NBA. The issue is it's just not working together, which is more of a roster development thing. Like, and I don't know if anyone knows if the answer to turning a corner is even in the building right now, which is tough to say. What do you think?
Before I answer the question, I would say on an optimistic note, you bring up Isaiah Stewart talking about how this is the most difficult thing that anyone in the locker room has gone through. And obviously he's right, right? I mean, these are all NBA players. They've not gone through losing at lower levels. These were all superstars wherever they played before getting to the NBA. But I do think you could make the argument that if this young group finds a way out of it, it could be a really galvanizing moment, right? If they get the win, they get the monkey off their back, and they figure out how to win in the NBA, whatever, just for one game and get some of that confidence back, that could really be a unifier, and you could see some change. So optimistically, that would be my answer. On the other hand, I think that the losing is screwing up the development. Like, I do. I really do, because so much of this game is confidence. So much of this game is confidence. And you're right. You get into the fourth quarter, this team just looks – they look dead. They look like they don't think that they can do it. They don't think that they can win. No one makes any shots. There's so much pressure that everyone's putting on themselves to get out of this. And if you want a really easy illustration of this, go back to on NBA.com. They've got this clutch statistic, right, which is just the last few minutes of close games. Go back and look at that for Cade Cunningham's rookie year. It wasn't, you know, over the moon. It wasn't incredible league leading, but it was pretty solid. All right. Compared to right now, when it feels like him and everyone else on this roster can't even put the ball in the hoop in the fourth quarter. Like, it's not just the turnovers, everything else. Everything else. Nothing's going right in the fourth quarter. And honestly, I do think that a lot of that just comes down to what you just said. It's confidence. They're on a, what is it now? 18-game losing streak? 18? Mm-hmm. Like, that messes with you. That's going to mess with you. And they don't buy in. And there's no reason for them to. It's a vortex right now. So I do think that the answer is probably outside the organization. And that, you know, there comes a time where the desperate move is the right move. Like, being desperate is sometimes very justified. And I think we're coming up on that, because right now, I think I said it last week, but maybe I didn't. But you cannot be the Charlotte Bobcats. You can't be the Charlotte Bobcats. You can't have all these top five, you know, lottery pick guys and only have Kemba Walker pan out and think that you're going to be okay. Like, none of those picks were wrong. What the Bobcats did, none of them were wrong in the moment. Nothing was confusing, but the culture that they had established, the losing that happened over the years, just killed the growth of everybody in that organization outside of Kemba Walker. And it is a rare guy that can rise above any organizational turmoil and still become an all-star type player. So I do think we're rapidly approaching time for the someone to bring out the nuclear briefcase and punch in some codes and make a move. Like, they need to try something, because you can't keep letting this happen.
Do you think that's a trade or like a adjustment within the organization, whether it's Troy Weaver or Monty? With all this, I guess, steps they can take, what do you think that would be? Just, not super specific, but generally.
I do think it's a trade, and I think you probably end up parting with one of the four guys that we were just talking about earlier as being kind of core pieces moving forwards. Where they're at right now is, at best, you're still going to get all-star type production from Cade Cunningham. And the rest is probably just not going to come along. Like, it is so hard to be a really good player in the NBA. And when you put a context around these guys that is just so malformed as this team is at the moment, like, even with Bojan back, like, look at the box score at the Memphis game. Who's the leading scorer behind Cade Cunningham and Bojan Bogdanovic? Did they crack 10 points? Like, the fact that I know the answer that they did, but the fact that I can ask that and you sit there and you go, like, I'm watching Blake's eyes for all of our podcasts. Like, he just went and looked at an outline to check the box score to make sure that before he answered that someone was getting into double digits. That's a problem. They just don't have enough talent right now. They have a lot of unrealized talent, a lot of potential. There's still super high ceilings. No one's going to reach it because there's no one they're able to help out at the moment. And I think that's the issue for me.
Yeah. And the reason I ask that is just because, like, maybe the answer is that, like, ownership, like, who you have in place to run this organization, like, really anyone, maybe they aren't the right person. But I guess, like, what I worry about is just how young this team is. Like, those going through any change, they already went through a change, like, when Dwayne Casey stepped down and Monty Williams came in. Going through more changes are like, that has to be so difficult to deal with. I was listening to JJ Redick's podcast today. He interviewed Kristaps Porzingis, who had like all this turnover when he was drafted in New York, and like somehow he was able to get through it. Like, he got through it elsewhere. But when you have like all these young guys who are trying to like figure out their way in the league, if they can find a way to win together, and then you're asking them to go through all these like organizational changes, get used to something new, every year, like twice a year, like whatever it's going to be, I think that's just an additional thing you're throwing at them that's really tough for such a young team to manage.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. So let's jump on to some Killian Hayes conversation, because you know what? Killian's been playing halfway decent basketball, so props to Killian. Our guy, YouTube user, always in the chat. We appreciate you, my friend. He asks, has Killian Hayes really, truly been playing well? He's had a few nice games. He's having less terrible games, but in YouTube user's opinion, he's generally more neutral, or at least just like kind of bad, but not awful. So to the point, has Killian Hayes actually been playing really well, or is it just kind of comparative to what he's been?
Yeah, I think in the Memphis loss, like it, like our friend YouTube user brings up here, like it wasn't efficient or anything. Like he didn't look great there. I thought he was really good in the Cleveland and New York games that were also losses, unfortunately, but those games specifically, I thought he played really well and sort of showed what he can be. And I think the most important thing with Killian Hayes at this point, like we know he's never going to be a guy that you can expect to go out and give you like 20, 25 every night. But I think what it is for him to like be successful, whether it's within this organization or within the league, is how he makes his teammates better around him. And I thought like that's what he did in those two games, and that led to some additional scoring for him as well. I think just the scoring has always been up and down for him, and we hoped it would continue. Like against Memphis, it looked questionable at best, so hopefully he can string together a few nice games here and there. In general, over the season, like, yeah, I wouldn't say he's been great over the full year, or even good for that matter. But I think over like the last few games, he showed like what he can bring to a roster, and specifically how he can play better off Cade and like unlock additional things for Cade and maybe some other people on the floor. I think that's the biggest thing with him. Yeah, are there some nights he's going to throw out some stinkers offensively? Yeah, but I think that's like what he is at this point. Hopefully he can find a way to limit it. But overall, like that two game stretch against Cleveland and New York, like I thought he was really good.
No, I agree. He was really good. He was, those were probably his best back-to-back games of his career. I might throw it up there, with that for him. I think the thing with Killian Hayes comes down to expectations. All right. Because coming into this season, it was a legitimate question if Killian Hayes was an NBA basketball player. That was a legitimate question. I think so far this year, through these first 21 games, he has definitively answered that, yes, he is an NBA basketball player. He could get minutes on most teams in the league. He'd be a backup. He'd be a solid backup, okay? The problem is when you start to analyze him as a starter, and that's where a lot of the flaws come up. You know, his shooting is unavoidable. He still can't shoot threes. That mid-range is starting to fall for him a little bit more often, but we've seen that be streaky throughout his career. So I'm not putting too much stock in that yet. I will say he's attacking the rim a lot more aggressively. It's led to more free throw attempts for him. Didn't happen against Memphis, but it has led to more free throw attempts for him in the past. He is improving. I think he is better than he was last year, which is something for me I was not sure about, especially early on in the season, the way he played like right out of the gates. I don't know. He was kind of up and down. But I think now you can definitively answer, yes, he's an NBA basketball player. He deserves a roster spot. I just wish it was a backup. I think he'd be a average to above average backup point guard in the NBA. And with this Pistons roster, he's just a bit overextended. Now something to watch for him that I've noticed over, I think, the past two games, definitely with Memphis, it's popped up once or twice, but against Memphis, he had three turnovers. Killian Hayes is not a guy that can turn the ball over. One of the big positives with him is that he never turns the ball over. So when you get games like that where he does have three turnovers, man, does it stand out. You know, he doesn't shoot the ball well. I think he shot 38% from the floor. It was like 5 for 13, 5 for 14, something like that. 1 for 3 from three. So 33% from three. Got to the line once. If that's what you're going to do, you can't turn the ball over, which he's been good at for the most part this season, but he has had a few games where he hasn't been. So, long story short, if you look at Killian Hayes and you say, okay, I'm analyzing you as a backup, I think he excels. You're really happy with him. If you look at him as a starter, which we've been forced to do, there's a lot that you are left wanting for. And that would be my Killian Hayes answer.
Yeah, totally agree. Like, maybe that's probably what he is in this league. Like, I would love him in that role. Like, unfortunately, because of the roster construction right now, he can't really do that, especially like after we played like Cade in that primary guard spot in the starting lineup, like had to do something different. And he looked good when he came back in and was the lead ball handler, allowing Cade to play off him. But yeah, I mean, I think if he was more in that 15 minutes a game range that we've seen Ivy in this year, then we would have like a lot more confidence in what he's doing within his minutes.
Yeah, but last thing I'll say before we move on to another question is that New York game where Cade played off ball for the first quarter and it really caught New York off guard. None of those passes that Killian made to Cade were difficult. They were all very, very basic reads that any other guard on this team would have made. And my only point is that you should just play Cade off ball a little bit more and those same things will happen. So, like, great. Did the bench really have zero free throws versus Memphis? YouTube yes. user, I believe that answer is yes.
Yes.
That's not fantastic. Good stuff. And to him being a sub 500 true shooting guy, yes, but he also gets a lot of steals. He's a plus defender, even though his on ball is not great. Makes up for it otherwise. Anyway, next question. This is from Cough 33. Blake, he asks, how do you explain players' minutes? So how do you explain these rotations? Do you think that they are trying to showcase Killian Hayes, Alec Burks, Marcus Sasser, or Isaiah Livers for a trade? What do you think?
No, like, I don't think it's sort of at that point. Or, I mean, if there is some want of that in the organization, I don't think that has worked its way down to Monty Williams and that being his top priority. I think his top priority right now is to win a basketball game. How do you do that when you have a bad team that has lost 18 games in a row? You junk it up. You do what he did when he put Killian Hayes back into the starting lineup, had Cade play off the ball, hasn't resulted in wins yet. If what your first idea to junk it up is doesn't work, what do? Go to the next thing. Maybe that's where these weird rotations from Jaden Ivey are coming from. I don't know. I'm just going to point out Burks specifically within this one. Like, I don't know how much trade value Alec Burks has in the league right now. I think he's a really good NBA player. I think he could definitely help a contender if they needed some 3-point shooting at the deadline, but he hasn't looked good. Like, I don't really know what he would get you back. So I don't think you'd necessarily want to show someone off like that for trade. It's more maybe the other guys. So teams could see, hey, they're still young, less of a cap hit. Maybe we can take a chance on someone like Hayes or Livers. Sasser, since he's a rookie, I think has more value. But overall, I just like don't think it's this deep right now. I think it's really just about trying to win a basketball game. And maybe the answer is not playing some of these guys.
No, I agree. And I think the biggest thing backing you up in all of this, Blake, is just how many different combinations Monty Williams has thrown out on the court so far through 21 games. Like, there are exactly two things that do not make any sense to me at all. And anybody on Pistons Twitter, anybody that's doing podcasts, anyone that's talking about basketball, anybody would agree with these. And it's Jaden Ivey and then James Wiseman getting minutes randomly over Marvin Bagley. Those are the only two things that don't make any sense. Everything else you can explain away by just saying, man, he is trying whatever the heck he can because they've lost 18 straight basketball games. And I get it. So, like, I'm not an NBA coach. Like, I can't tell them that these are wrong. I don't know better than Monty Williams, unless it's with Jaden Ivey and James Wise. But those are the only two that I'm pretty confident in. Everything else, I think you can wave away. So, no, I don't think that they're trying to showcase Killian Hayes for a trade. I genuinely think Monty Williams likes Killian Hayes, and Killian Hayes has been giving him reasons to like him. So, great. Burks and Sasser, no. Livers, no. With Alec Burks' trade value, I mean, I'd call back to Langston Galloway back in the day when the team was trying to shop Langston Galloway, and he was hot from three. He shot like he was over 40% leading into that trade deadline. Like, he was blazing hot from three, and all their NBA teams kind of looked at him and said, like, okay, yeah, he's on a hot streak, but it's Langston Galloway. I know what I'm getting, and there weren't any good offers. So I would say the same thing in reverse for Alec Burks. He hasn't been playing well. His shot hasn't been falling since he came back from this injury. But I would say teams probably look at him and go, okay, he's been cold, but it's Alec Burks. I know what I'm getting. There's a lot of data on him. So I don't think you have to show him off, and I don't really think you're risking anything other than him getting hurt for his trade value. The two guys, though, that I said confuse me, I do genuinely wonder if they're being showcased a little bit. Like, why did James Wiseman play over Marvin Bagley, who's been playing very good basketball recently? Why is Jaden Ivey getting, like, minutes one quarter at a time, but not getting minutes also a quarter at a time? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. It makes absolutely no sense at all, unless there maybe is something going on. Now, that something else could be, you know, in the locker room, it could be personal, it could be between coach and player, or it could be trade. Don't know. But I do, there's something weird going on with those guys. I can't explain that. Everything else, 100%, man. Like, Monty's just throwing anything at the wall and praying to God that it sticks.
Well, Monty did say that he just wanted to give James Wiseman some run after he had some DNP coaches' decisions to start the year. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't.
Blake, here's the thing, Blake, all right? Here's the thing. The two games that James Wiseman gets run are games against the other worst teams in the NBA. Your two most winnable games recently were the Wizards and the Grizzlies. And he's like, nah, James Wiseman time. We can afford it. What do you mean you wanted to get him run? You want to end a losing streak? What's going on?
Well, yeah, that's what, I mean, I personally, it didn't cross my mind for how these rotations are working out. Like, with those two specifically, maybe that's what it is. But I think if you think that and you look at how they've been used and the minutes they've been getting, like, I could talk myself into that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And a YouTube user brings up in the chat that, you know, maybe playing Killian Hayes 30 minutes isn't a winning strategy. But, like, the thing is, like, look at the alternative that they have in the guard rotation and who's playing well. Jaden Ivey's playing well. We've touched on that. We don't get that. We don't get why he's not playing more. Everyone else, though, like, Sasser's cold. Burks is cold. There's just no other options. There's really not any other options. And Asar Thompson hasn't been playing the best basketball either. So outside of Jaden Ivey, who appears to be in a very, very unique and special doghouse, there's just nothing else there. Let's do one or two more here, Blake. Hey, you know what? Actually, let's talk about your guy, Asar Thompson. This is from KCP for three, and it's through in the DBB chat. He asked, what did Asar Thompson do wrong? He saw no reason to bench him. He was one of the most productive players in the starting lineup. What do you think?
I think, and I mean, we have seen Asar have a short leash every now and then, like especially that one game where he turned the ball over like a good amount in the first half, and then he essentially didn't play in the second half. I think moving him out of the starting lineup, I think it right now at this point, it's he only hasn't started three games this season, so I'm sort of just equating it to the Bojan coming back from injury. Personally, like, I mean, you mentioned you want to do it as well. I would love to see him play alongside Bojan more. But yeah, it's strange that, like, I don't want to say he's taken a step back on the bench because I think a lot of it has just been he's gotten into foul trouble quickly in his minutes, like, put
Sure.
himself and Monty Williams in uncomfortable situations and, like, just not able to maximize his time on the floor. Unfortunately, we know that right now he can be a liability offensively, especially if he's just standing out on the perimeter. Yeah, he's getting open looks, like, but he's not making them. So, I mean, he has time with that. Like, he made one for four last night, and like the one he made looked good, like. And he's had some ugly shots. So like I don't know. I'm just like hoping he can find a way to just be more efficient because he's super efficient close to the rim and even like the short mid-range. Like the way he just gets up and can get over the top of defenders with just like his athleticism is not something you can easily replace. And I think since he's been on the bench, where he's been lacking is his opportunities at the rim. And I think that might just be because he's not playing alongside Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren as much. So he gets more of the attention down low. Hopefully he can figure out a way to work around that. But, you know, I'm with you. I'd like to see Asar in the starting lineup. At least staggered a sense with Bojan back, especially now with Jalen Duren missing some time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I agree with you. I was talking about that combo too earlier, but I think something that you said is probably the short answer reason for why he's not starting right now, and that is the turnovers, right? So he had that game where he had, shoot, what was it, six or seven in like the first half, and then he didn't play again in the second half. He can't do that, right? Like you look up and down this roster. And guys that you can accept turning the ball over a decent amount and still hope to win, even though they've not been doing that recently, are basically Cade Cunningham and Bojan Bogdanovic. And that's not because their turnovers are better, it's because they can make up for the turnovers in other ways. And Ausar Thompson can't do that because he's not going to go out and score 30 points. He's not going to make a bunch of jump shots. Like he just doesn't have that in him. He can get the steals, get the blocks. Yes, but like he can't make up for it offensively. So, and to be fair, Isaiah Stewart has this problem. Jalen Duren has this problem. This is not just an Ausar Thompson thing. He was just kind of the peak of it, and he's a rookie, so he's going to get a shorter leash on that. And when he has come off the bench, turnovers have still been an issue. So, I think between that and the foul trouble he's been in, like what did he do wrong? I think it's those two things. I would still say he probably should start next to Bojan just to give you that wing defense that they have been missing because Isaiah Livers hasn't been able to provide it at a high level. But like, just to answer the question directly, he turned the ball over a lot and he commits like a foul a minute when he's not having a good game, and that's just kind of what it is for Ausar Thompson. You got anything more?
Just quickly, I think the fouls thing is something that can be cleaned up. Like, I think some of the whistles against
Oh, yeah.
him, like when he's starting, he's drawing the opposition's top option a lot of times who gets a good whistle in the NBA and is just not like Asar isn't like I think he's playing good defense enough to where it in the long term, it's not like I'm not worried about him being inconsistent foul trouble or getting into early foul trouble like I have been in the past with like Jalen Duren or Isaiah Stewart. Like, I think he knows what to do. And this actually might be one of just he's not getting a good whistle, or who he's assigned to is getting too good of a whistle.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you on the fouls. It's kind of bad luck of the draw, I guess. You know, and it is going to happen for a rookie. So I think that's a pretty easy one for him to improve. So I'm not too worried about it. Let's try and squeeze two more in if we can. But I want to hit on this one because we did also get a comment from our live audience, Johnny Badman, asking something very similar, and this one's from Sparma in the DBB chat, so from both of these people, asking, is there a realistic trade, so i.e. one that would be good for both teams involved and both teams that would accept, for Zach LaVine, and would you do it if you were the Pistons? And then just to add on, Johnny in the chat mentioned maybe you could get away with sending Marcus Sasser instead of Jaden Ivey. He thinks maybe that's possible. So on both sides of that, what are your thoughts, Blake?
Yeah, so I didn't really think you could get Zach LaVine without giving up somewhat like a Jaden Ivey until the recent reporting. I think it was from like Woj and Bobby Marks that the Zach LaVine market isn't very hot right now. I'm still not sure if you'd be able to get him without giving up Jaden Ivey. But that said, like, it depends on what the Bulls are trying to do to me. If they just want to take on like dead money, have cap flexibility in the future, and gain like a draft asset and a young player, whether that's Sasser or Ivey, like, I think you can do it. It's just like, I really don't know what direction they're trying to go into. I put together a couple of options for this. Like, I think, I mean, you have to include Joe Harris or Bojan just to get to Zach LaVine's money. I would say it would be Joe Harris just because he's on a 1-year deal. And I don't know if the Bulls would have interest in a guy like Bojan, depending on if they're just trying to strip everything down. Then you can throw in like James Wiseman, whose deal is up after the end of the year, or if you want to throw in like a Marvin Bagley or Alec Burks, you can do that too. And then it would just be Sasser, Ivy, and then draft picks. So I don't know if you can get Zach LaVine still without giving up Jaden Ivy. I just think it might be a little bit more possible than I thought of maybe last week.
Yeah, I honestly, I still don't think it would be possible to get him without moving Jaden Ivey. And the probably the thing of it is that I would doubt that the Detroit Pistons are really high on Zach LaVine's list. And when his market is not high, like, yeah, he doesn't have a ton of leverage, but he can kind of force his way here and there if no one's going to overpay for him, if you know what I mean. So I think that the Pistons, if they wanted Zach LaVine, would have to make a legit and fair offer for him. I would guess that you would need Joe Harris, Jaden Ivey, and Alec Burks. I doubt that that the Bulls would really have much interest in a guy like James Wiseman. They have Vucevic and Andre Drummond. So beyond him being an expiring contract, there's not a ton of value there. They're not in a position to take a shot on a guy like James Wiseman. Alec Burks, though, would play. He'd probably usurp one of those guards, maybe Io or Jen Carter. So I bet Burks would play. And then obviously Jaden Ivey would kind of step right in and start for the Bulls, which he can't do for the Pistons for some reason. Would either team do it? Honestly, I bet the Bulls would. Getting a guy like Jaden Ivey for Zach LaVine is kind of a best-case scenario for them. Jaden Ivey is still a very, very good prospect and a very, very good scoring guard prospect, which is almost a direct one-to-one replacement for what they're losing in Zach LaVine. They might even be able to get away without like totally resetting the whole thing if they were to able to make a trade like that. Would the Pistons? I think they should. Would they? I don't know. I wonder how much of a disconnect there is between Monty Williams and Troy Weaver on a guy like Jaden Ivey for something like this. So,
Yeah, and also just
yeah,
a
that,
quick thing,
yeah.
like Zach LaVine is going to be out for like 3 to 4 weeks. So I know as we've been talking about these trades, like health concerns have been a huge thing. And I know we want to make a trade or do something as soon as we can, but Zach LaVine is going to be out for some time, which kind of like messes up the whole trade discussions as well, not just for us, but his market across the league.
Well, Blake, you know, how much would this team really be losing if Jaden Ivey's not playing and Alec Burks can't hit water if he fell out of a boat?
That is true.
I don't know.
Not much is going on
No,
there, no.
ideally you just wait to the end of the month and then you try to make the move then, and God forbid the Pistons haven't won a game by then. But you know what? Let's quickly end the show with some optimism. All right, Blake, let's do it. Ofella again, our guy from the DBB chat, asked our opening question, and now he's got the closing one too. He wants to know, what is your reason for optimism heading into the next game against the Orlando Magic?
Oh man. Well, first of all, I mean, I love that we still have a fella, and I know there are a lot of people out there, even though it's tough, like still just looking for signs of optimism. I mean, it's hard night in, night out. But you know, and I am not gonna go really like rotations thing or even like X's and O's, like what they could do. Really, And following the Pistons for however long it's been now, like they, especially in recent years, like all these bad teams, we've seen them win games that they shouldn't win for really like no reason. I think that we've all been looking at the schedule and targeting like Washington and Memphis, like the streak's gonna end here. Like I think the streak might end when we just don't think it's going to. We go in and just have no reason. Like another team comes in and maybe they just like underestimate our personnel or we like do something different that throws them off a bit. There are 82 games in a season, so it's a long season for everyone, not us. Yes, Johnny, I was thinking of the Warriors game last year. So I think there have been like a ton of examples like that where the Pistons have we're putting out these young teams and we go out there and win these random games when we're least expecting it. I think that's what's going to happen here. I don't know when it's going to happen. Like we're when this is released, we'll be playing Orlando in Orlando the same night. I highly doubt it's going to happen there, but maybe it does. Change of scenery, weird week with the in-season tournament. So I think we're going to end the streak against a good team, ironically. That I have no logic to that whatsoever. So Wes, I want to know why you're optimistic.
That was the weirdest mix of like total optimism, but yet so pessimistic at the same time. I love it. That was great. And you are right. I mean, they did knock off the Warriors last year, like you guys mentioned. So I would say the one little bit, the kernel of hope that I have, and I think a lot of people can have, is that look, kind of like you said, they're not going to go 2-80, so they're going to win again. And just I will admit on this podcast that I do not know anything about basketball if Cade Cunningham and Bojan Bogdanovic are not good enough to win a game. Like those two guys, we don't know a lot about this team, but those two guys are very good basketball players, and they can't just keep losing. They're too good for that. Like it is gonna happen. It's gonna happen. That's all. So I would say hang your hat on those two. They're very, very talented. Bojan can shoot. They fit well together. They have good chemistry. Bojan's a leader. Like I think those two are going to win you a few games just on their backs alone. And you know what? Dang it, it's going to happen in Orlando or not. If it doesn't happen, then it'll happen later. But those two guys, that's my reason for optimism.
There it is. There's a prediction. The Detroit Pistons are going to beat the Orlando Magic. And if they don't, then they can beat the Indiana Pacers on Monday night, who I am not sure if they advance in the in-season tournament, but Tyrese Haliburton is awesome. So that is
so fun.
He is fun to watch. It definitely stings that it's in the division, but that is a fun team. The Pistons can beat them. They've had a longer week than us. So it's going to happen soon. It's going to happen when we least expect it. Mark it down that Wes predicted the Pistons to beat the Magic, and we are going.
It was a loose prediction. It was loose.
Loose prediction. I respect that. You can, whatever the game spread is, we can give you the points on that one. But if we've proven anything, when we lose, we're getting blown out. So we'll call it there on a note of optimism. Thank you everyone for joining in the chat, and those of you listening on whatever podcast platform you are listening to it on. Special thanks to Sean Court, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. Shout out to all you guys as well for consistently tuning in, chatting Detroit hoops with us, and thank you for providing all the great questions and talking points tonight. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or here live with us on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you all.